Good morning, Reality Church. How are you guys doing today, huh? Doing all right? Hey, great weather, right? Well, it's not. It'll get better. It is so cool to see you guys. Welcome to Reality Church. My name is Lance Birch. I'm one of the pastors here at Reality. And if you're a first-timer, it's a great time for you to check out this series. We're actually on part four of our series called Who Do You Think We Are? But all of the other sermons in this series are available online. You can go and look at it there. And if you're watching online right now, so glad that you made the choice to click on this sermon. Welcome, and we hope that you get something out of it. We want to unify. This series has been about us unifying around who we are as a church, to recalibrate our mission, what we're about, to kind of renew our kind of passion for what we're doing. God is calling us to be something to this community. God is calling us to make an impact in this community, so we want to unify around that vision. And when a vision like our vision grabs your heart, when a vision really grabs your heart, it's really you can't think about anything else. At least I can't. When a vision grabs your heart, it's sort of like falling in love. Do you remember when you're falling in love and you can't think about anything else? I remember when I was in college and I had just had a really bad breakup, and I got invited to go to this church where I was going to be a speaker at sort of an overflow weekend type event. And I'm sitting there sort of heartbroken, but anyway, this girl walks in, she's wearing a red and black shirt. I'm sitting there, I'm supposed to be focused on spiritual things and God and all that. I'm totally not, because she walks into the room and I turn to Neil, my friend, and I said, check out the girl wearing the red and black shirt. And he said, yeah, she looks like Sonia. That was my ex-girlfriend. And that is cruel. That is just mean. And I said, no, she doesn't. Anyway, I didn't fall in love at that moment, but I was completely infatuated. And I had a vision, a mission that I was going to do. I was going to get to know her. I was going to learn. She was in Shreveport, Louisiana. And actually, she lived in Bossier. I didn't know it at the time. But anyway, I just thought, I'm going to get to know her. I was 20 years old, and she was 18. In my mind, it turned out she was not. Kids, plug your ears. She was 16. So anyway, I wrote her a letter. I called her up. I said, would you go out with me? Her mom let her go out with me. I think it's because I sang Steve Green's People Need the Lord at church that Sunday. So she thought, the guy can't be all bad. And she let her go out with me. I'll never forget, there was a tornado warning in Shreveport, Louisiana. The night that I went to pick her up, it was Easter weekend. I gave her mom flowers. Guys, take notes. Gave her mom flowers. And it was Easter weekend, so I put on the note, he is risen indeed. That's pretty good stuff, you know. So I take this girl out, and we go to Ralph and Kaku's. Maybe if you're in the Air Force, you've been to Ralph and Kaku's. Anybody ever been to a good place? I had the crawfish etouffee. It's really good. We talked, getting to know each other, and I just had this vision. This girl, this unbelievable girl, is maybe going to be my wife someday. And it didn't work out, and I married Amy, but no. It was Amy. And we did get married, and it was really I didn't think about anything. I didn't have any cash at all, but I did have a Zales credit card that for some reason they gave me. And I bought necklaces, and I put the necklace on a stuffed bear, and I gave her that bear. I was so focused because I had this vision of what I wanted to have happen. I wanted to take something temporary, my credit rating, and turn it into something that lasted, right? I wanted to take my cash and turn it into something that was going to last for a while. And we do that. Our stuff follows our heart, doesn't it? I mean, people don't buy stuff as much as they invest in the vision of what they think that stuff is going to do for them. You're not really buying stuff. You're kind of buying into this idea of what that stuff is going to do. That's what advertisements are all about. They kind of talk about, you deserve it. You know, you see these car ads where it's like, you know, you need to step up to, you know, what, and people, you know, driving down the road and all the pretty girls are like looking at this guy driving a car. And you think, I don't want to just buy a car. I want to be that guy. And so the guy in the convertible you see driving down the road, he didn't just buy a convertible. He's buying into this vision of what he thinks that lifestyle is going to be all about. He has this vision in his mind. The person who stands in line for hours to buy the latest iPhone, they're not just buying a phone, okay?
That cannot be about just buying a phone. That level of excitement cannot be about a phone, can it? Because we didn't do this back when I was growing up. Nobody walked out of the AT&T store with a rotary phone going, holding it up going, yes, look at this thing. Look at that thing. Look at the technology there. Nobody did that. So this has got to be about some sort of I'm joining the iPhone cult or whatever it is. I've got this vision for what's happening. That retirement account, it's not about the numbers. By the way, right now, don't look at your retirement account, okay? Don't right now. But it's not about those numbers. It's about what you think those numbers mean for you, what sort of lifestyle you're going to have, where you're going to be able to live, how you're going to be able to travel. It's about a vision. And when you buy into that vision, it's sort of like falling in love. You don't care about the temporary. You want to take the temporary and make it last. So we're willing to invest. All of us are. If the vision captures your heart, you're always willing to invest, whether it's a car or a new style that you want to start. You know, I want to have this sort of look. Whatever it is, you're willing to invest if the vision captures your heart. New car, new home, new place, new zip code. So the people know I'm that zip code now. I've moved up in the world. Whatever it is, you're really buying into the vision. That's why people make endowments to like universities. They say, I want to take what's temporary and I want to make this temporary thing last. So I want to start a scholarship. Or else I want to build a wing onto a building and I want it to bear my name. I want to take what's temporary, my cash, and I want to turn it to something that lasts. Seemed like every other weekend at ETBU where I went to school, where I went to college, somebody was on campus and they were holding some sort of ribbon cutting thing and they were hanging up paintings, huge paintings, sometimes unflattering paintings of people who were donating huge sums of money to our school to build onto a wing and call it their last name. So they were all about it. They were willing to invest if they bought into the vision of the university, if they bought into what's going on. Foundations are made. The Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. There, people give all kinds of money to that. And in fact, Warren Buffett, I think, donated billions with a B to that. Because if you buy into the vision, you're willing to invest in it. And these past 3 weeks, I've been talking to you about the vision for our church. And I got to tell you, I'm in love with it. I'm absolutely in love with our vision because I think it's how you make disciples. We believe as a church that if you focus your mind on God, Romans 12:2, fix your attention on God, you'll be changed from the inside out. If you fix your attention, if you focus on God, and that's what we're trying to do here, you get changed. That's just what happens. You do it through Bible, you do it through prayer, you do it through a lot of different ways. But when you focus your attention on God, He changes you. The next thing is, we believe that you risk relationships. In order to have any relationships, you've got to be authentic. You've got to be real. That's kind of a leap of faith for a lot of people. But we believe if you do it, if you focus your attention on God, fix your attention on God, and risk authentic relationships with other people, then you're going to have not just a lasting impact, but an eternal impact, a forever impact. If you focus your attention on God and you risk relationships with other people, and that legacy right here for me is better than a lasting legacy because this is an eternal legacy. When we do this, we send out ripples into eternity. And if you love this as much as I do, if you have fallen in love with this, if this gets under your skin and you think, I think that's true. I really believe it, that if I focus my life on God and I genuinely risk relationships with other people, then I will eventually make an impact on this world that'll last forever. If you think that's true, then you'll fall in love with it. And you're just willing, you're going to invest in the vision that captures your heart. Everyone does. We always do. So there's this principle at work with how we feel about our money, our stuff, our cash. And one of the ways that you can tell that money has a grip on you is if right now your throat's getting a little tight and you're sitting up a little straighter like, is this that I came on one Sunday a year? I came on the money Sunday, right? If that's you, then maybe you're like, man, church just manipulates people and church is all about getting, and I've seen enough televangelists to you know, just make me sick and make me throw up into my mouth, and I don't want any part of that. Well, listen, we're not going to I'll tell you this right up front. If you don't want to give anything to this church, that is absolutely fine with me, but there's a disclaimer on it that we'll get to during the sermon. See, people don't like to be manipulated when it comes to money, and I get that. There was actually something very funny online. A parent-teacher organization put out a flyer to all of the parents. How many of you guys have ever done school fundraisers? You love those things? Yeah, selling like miniature candy bars, but they blow them up in the brochure. It's like, man, that looks really big. Then you get it and you go, how did they do that? What sort of Photoshop did they use? This is like a morsel. It just drives me crazy. But I always give, by the way. If the kids come to my door, I'm like that guy. I'm like, I get down, I look at him, I say, yeah, you're a good, I want to encourage people. You're a good salesman. That's actually good. You used my name. You looked me in the eye. I'll buy your $35, you know, container of hot chocolate. You know, that sounds like a good deal. Whatever. Where's this going to? All right, whatever. But I do that. But this parent-teacher organization said, we're not going to do that anymore, all right? We know that you hate the fundraisers. And so this is what they did. They put this up. They sent this out to all the parents, and it had this line item there. It's coming up. This line item, it says, look, $15. I don't want to bake. So here's the money I would have spent on those cupcakes, right? So these parents are like, are you kidding me? This is too good to be true. $25. I don't want to hit up my friends, family, and coworkers. So here's the money I would have spent buying that wrapping paper. $25 for wrapping paper. That's great. Look at the bottom one here. $100. I really wouldn't have helped anyway. So here's $100 to forget my name. That's the way we feel sometimes when it comes to, you showed up here right now and you're like, Lance, I would pay you $100 to quit preaching about money right now. And if that's you, then raise your hand. No. But Jesus seems to think, and Jesus all throughout the Bible seems to think that there's this very powerful, very important principle when it comes to our stuff. An incredible point about money and how God views our money. And so we're going to look at what Jesus has to say. For those of you who don't know this, Jesus spoke about money and our stuff more than he spoke about heaven and hell combined. And so he must think, and we're big fans of Jesus here, by the way, he must think that this is pretty important, and we ought to take a look at it every once in a while. So Matthew chapter 6, we're going to be looking at, it's in the middle of the Sermon on the Mount, Matthew chapter 6, starting in verse 19. So here's what Jesus says about money. Don't store up treasures, that's money, that's your cash, that's your credit. Don't store up treasures, that's your stuff. Don't store up treasures here on earth, where what can happen? Where moths eat them and rust destroys them and where thieves break in and steal. And those things, probably all of those things have happened at some point to your stuff, or it just plain old goes out of fashion. I've got ties in my closet when I used to wear ties that, you know, they're ugly. They were beautiful at one point, and now they're, Rachel told me this, my daughter, she's 16. They're too wide now, and I can't wear them in good conscience anymore. Where moths eat them, where rust destroys them. When I moved to Nebraska, something happened to my car, and I didn't wash it. Do you guys wash your car after all the salt and stuff? I didn't wash my car a lot, and so now my little Gallant, is rusting on the bottom, and that's sad because it's an awesome car, 2002 Gallant. That's what I drive. I don't know. When you're driving certain cars, people have a wave that they give. Like if you're in a Jeep, they'll throw up the four when they pass another Jeep. You know, it's like, yeah, four-wheel drive, you know. I don't know what you do when you're driving a Gallant. I guess it's just like we see each other and we go, Gallant, you know. I don't know what we do, but anyway, it's kind of sad. It's getting a little rusty. But instead of storing up your treasures here on earth, store up your treasures in heaven. Why? Because moths and rust cannot destroy and thieves do not break in and steal. So he's saying, to understand these verses, you have to take them together. The Bible is not saying don't save. In fact, the Bible has all sorts of things to say about putting some money away, about saving and investing and things like that. It's got all sorts of things to say about being a good steward of the things that you're given. But it was to teach, Jesus here is teaching against our propensity to just spend and spend and spend on stuff and stuff and stuff, to spend all of our money on acquiring some more stuff. Because Jesus is saying here, you've got an opportunity looking at you. You've got an opportunity staring you in the face. And it is this, it's to take something temporary and make it eternal. Now that's better than taking something temporary and making it last. Jesus is actually saying here that you can take your temporary stuff and you can invest it in such a way as to make it last forever. You can take something temporary and make it eternal. Now that's good news. And if we get it, he's not telling us to give everything away, but it's in all of us, this propensity, this drive to acquire the new one, the shiny one, the upgrade. I'm always a sucker for the upgrade. You know, I just want to upgrade. I've got this one, but now they've come out with a iPhone 6 Plus, S, whatever they're going to name it. It doesn't matter. I'm there. I want the upgrade. I want the latest model. We can get so caught up in this. And at some point, we need to ask ourselves, am I walking down this path blindly? Am I just drinking it all in? They're selling me this, and I'm buying. I'm buying into the vision of what they think my life needs to be. Am I walking down this path blindly? Now, the whole tone of this talking, Jesus talking to his followers, is sort of the tone of a dad talking to his 15-year-old daughter, where you sit down and you say, listen, sweetie, you know, you're just spent every single dime that you're getting, it's just going out. You're working for money, but you're spending it on stuff. Now listen, and I happen to have a 16-year-old daughter. Look, I don't have anything against nail polish at all. I think it's nice, but I think if we would just take the nail polish in my house, we could afford to buy this building, I think. So I don't have anything against clothes, but do you realize that sometimes as a dad, you just want to sit down and say, do you realize the opportunity that you've got? You're earning money. You have more income that's not accounted for. It just, you know, what do they call that income? Well, you don't, yeah, you have more disposable income right now at 16 than you ever will have in the rest of your life. Every dime that you get, you can spend where you want. So invest some, save some, sweetie. You could have $100,000, $200,000. If somebody would have just sat down with me and told me that when I was 16, I would have completely ignored them and done whatever I wanted. But still, you listen to me. So if she could just invest it, you've got, what I'm saying is to her, you've got this opportunity staring you in the face. And I think Jesus is saying the same thing to us. You can take what you've got. You can take this temporary thing. And by the way, it is very temporary. And you can turn it into something eternal. So don't, Jesus is staring at us. He's like that dad, and we're like the 15-year-old girl. And he's saying, look, I know your stuff. I know what's in your storage building. I know what's in your attic. And I'm not against your stuff. But listen, you owe money on things you don't even use anymore. Because that's the way credit cards work, right? I'm just going to pay the minimum monthly payment. It breaks. So whatever it is you purchased broke somewhere along the line, and you're still making payments on stuff that's broken. And Jesus is saying, look, we all have this drive, this propensity, this kind of bent towards acquiring more and more stuff. And look, don't just be consumed with the acquisition of stuff. You've got this chance to store up treasure in heaven where it won't go out of fashion, where it won't break, where you don't have to read the manuals and keep up with the, you know, all of the prescribed things that you're supposed to do. I've got a lawnmower, and I bought the lawnmower, and they gave me this big manual with it. You can also access it online, and I never read it. All right, my basic opinion on this is, when it breaks, after I don't change the oil for 5 years, I'll buy a new one, okay? So that's bad, and don't follow my lead on that. But have you ever thought, I've got so much stuff, I can't even keep up with the preventative maintenance on the stuff I own. I've got too much stuff. It gets really complicated. The more stuff you own, the more stuff breaks. And I think he's saying, don't be consumed with this acquisition of stuff. Take something temporary instead and make it eternal. And he cracks the door open during this teaching. of this intriguing sort of mystery of treasure in heaven, he's actually saying that the stuff we do here and how we invest what we have here can store up for us something that never goes away. And that's intriguing to me. Because if I know that what I do now, you might say, isn't that selfish? Isn't that motivated by selfishness? I think that God all the time and all through Scripture says, there's going to be rewards for you if you follow me. There's going to be rewards in heaven. Now, I don't know how it all works out, but I just know that some people are going to waste their lives and some people are going to think ahead and say, I'm going to store up some treasure in heaven. So it's so imperative that you and I have a plan to get away from this predisposition to just acquire stuff. And the reason is this. He goes on to talk about why. The reason is you're at stake. Your whole life is at stake. Your heart is at stake. Verse 21, he says, wherever your treasure is, there the desires of your heart will also be. Where you place your treasure, that's where your heart is going to be. There's a unique and mysterious connection between your cash and your heart. A unique and mysterious connection between those two things. And if you want to know where your heart is, it's not that much of a mystery. Look at your Visa bill. Look at your checkbook. Look at where your money is going. And the reason you've got to stop that cycle is because your heart is at stake. Jesus would say this, and I echo it even for our church. We don't need your money. And Jesus would say, I don't need your money. I own everything. But I do want your heart. And because this and this are linked, you need to maybe invest. And he shows us the way out. Think about being in love. Think about how much money you blew when and it was pure heart, right? You do silly things when you're in love. You stand at a carnival game for maybe an hour, blowing 20 bucks on a 50-cent stuffed animal. See, I'm hero. Me bring teddy bear. That sort of thing. It doesn't make any sense, but you do it. Why? Because it's pure heart. You don't think about it. It's mindless. If you want to know where your heart is, watch where the cash is going. Golf fanatics do not think about the amount of money they're spending. People who love to play golf don't go, I don't know whether I can go today. You know, the greens fees. They lie to their wives. How much were the greens fees? It was free today. They gave it to me for free today. It was no big deal. And so they don't even think about it. They don't, obsess about how much money they're going to spend on that driver. If you're a fanatic, you just go. If you're a shopping fanatic, you don't obsess about all that. Maybe later when you get the bill. But when you're doing it, when you're in the zone, you just shop. You do it. Amy gave me a list of things to do the other day, and I accomplished all of them, which was rare for me, but I did all of them. But on her list was, you've been talking about this for a long time, so go online and buy some cycling gear. Okay. I love cycling, so this was the easiest thing ever. I thought, okay, I'll do that one. I saved it to last even because I wanted to anticipate the moment when I was going to sit in front of the computer and go to Amazon and just go crazy. I got me a bike stand where I can do my repairs. I got all those it's like hairband pants, but they cut them off right here, right? And they're like Lycra shorts. I feel like Striper when I'm wearing them. No, I'm just kidding. That, in case you don't know who Striper is, God bless you. Good for you. Some Striper fans out there just went, oh, sorry about that. List. So anyway, you spend money you know you can't afford when it's just pure heart. I didn't mind going and buying that stuff. It's easy for me to spend in that area. Why? Because I'm passionate about it. I love hopping on the bike. I love having new stuff to hop on the bike with. That sort of thing, it's mindless. It's pure heart. And my heart follows where I put my money. Jesus would say that's where your heart is. You can't control your money because your heart's out of control. Your heart is following this. Jesus offers a way out of that hole, a way back, some leverage to move from where we're at to where we really need to be, since these two things are linked. And if you'll start, he says, if you'll start intentionally putting more pictures of dead presidents into my kingdom, guess what will eventually follow? Your heart will. I don't really care about those, but I do care about this. I do care about your heart. I want it. And where your treasure is, there your heart goes. It's a powerful principle. If you're wondering about your relationship with God, if you're wondering why you're waffling back and forth, if you're struggling, he's saying, if you will get your finances in order, and that's a big if, but if you will, then things will change at a heart level. Things that you could never imagine would change, will change. And he's saying, I guarantee that, because your heart follows your treasure, and your treasure follows your heart. Jesus goes into this bizarre illustration after this. He says, your eye, it doesn't even look like it's supposed to be there, but it is. Your eye is a lamp that provides light for your body. And when your eye is good, your whole body is filled with light. Your whole body. But when your eye is bad, your whole body is filled with darkness. And if the light you think you have is actually darkness, how deep is that darkness? He's basically saying, if you're walking around and you think you've got good eyes, but they're really dark, then you're going to hurt yourself. And it's not just going to hurt your eye. It's going to hurt your whole body. If you've ever tried to walk around in a dark room with maybe Legos on the floor, you know what sort of ungodly pain is headed your way if you step on one of those things. Or if you've ever stubbed your toe on a coffee table, you know that sort of agony. It's comedic if we could watch each other do that, but it's really painful. He says, look, if your eye is dark, it's going to hurt all of you. And if your eye is good, it's going to bless all of you. It's going to be good for the whole body. So if we cut out all the lights right now and one light came on, that's where all the attention would go. The light gives direction. Your eye is like a lamp to the whole body. It sets the direction for your whole body. Just as your heart follows your money, and just as your money follows your heart, your body follows your eyes. Your body follows your eyes. Then he goes a level deeper. This word good in verse 22. If you have a good eye. Nowhere else in the whole Bible is this Greek word used. It actually means generous. In other words, if you have a generous eye, an eye that lets in all sorts of light, if it's a generous eye, then your whole body will be full of light. Light is good in the Bible, by the way. Not just your eye will be blessed, but your whole body. So if you have a generous eye, then you're going to be blessed. If you, on the other hand, in verse 23, have a bad eye, and the word there is envious, an envious eye. In Matthew, that's the way it's used. It's darkness. He's saying what you already know, guys. Money is not just about money. You know this. We know this. You know this intuitively. Money is not just about money, little pieces of paper with dead presidents on it. That can ruin your marriage. You guys know this. It's not just about money. It can absolutely ruin relationships. It can ruin family relationships. It's money. You can make you lay in bed and worry all night. It's about everything. It can make you depressed. It can make you really extremely happy. It can make you get drunk. It can make you not sleep. It controls and touches every single thing in your life. Your whole body, everything is affected when the eye is good. And your whole body, everything is blessed when your heart is good. If your perspective on money is off, eventually everything else in your life will go south. Not just your finances will suffer. But if you can get it straight, it will also touch every single area of your life. The reason we need to talk about money is because it's not isolated. Its tentacles stretch out and they touch every area of your life. Your thinking, your perspective, your job habits, everything. If you would begin to understand what's at stake, Jesus would say, if you would just allow me to open your eyes on the difference between storing up stuff on earth and storing up stuff in heaven. If you miss this, if you don't have a generous eye, if you have an envious eye, like every time you pass a mannequin, you've got to buy whatever is on it. If every time you pass a car dealership, you can't think straight until you get yourself an upgrade, that's not just going to affect you financially. It's going to echo in every other area of your life. And don't we know that that's the truth? He would say, I really don't care about your money. I care about this. And the reason I can't get more of this is because you're messed up when it comes to your cash. It will send echoes into every area of your life. And then he goes to the real heart of the matter in verse 24. Look at verse 24. He says, no one can serve two masters. You can only serve one. For you'll hate one and you'll love the other. You'll be devoted to one and despise the other. You cannot serve both God and money. You can't. You're going to serve one of those two. No one can serve two masters. You can't serve both God and money. This actually comes down to, in my life and in yours, who is in control? Who is really running the show in my life? Who's going to be in control of your life? The two options are God or pictures of dead presidents. And some of us, we're so messed up in this that we can't even have one-on-one time with God every day without worry, without the worry of finances coming into that conversation. Think about your stuff. And God is saying, look, I'll never be Lord of your life. I'll never be the one you're following. I'll never be the one who's teaching you how to do life because you're so messed up with this stuff. And I want to be Lord because I'm God and I know how to do this and I love you. I'm sick of competing with golf and cars and clothes and travel and stuff. Instead, let's turn the temporary into something eternal. Let's take something temporary and make it eternal. So how do you do this? How do you do that? I know you're all asking that. Well, I've got an answer. It's a practical conclusion that I got from a guy named Andy Stanley who preaches at a little church in Georgia. And they are these. There are three words that help me figure out how I should do this. And I actually live this. It's reallocating my income along these lines. Number one is percentage giving. Percentage giving as opposed to just putting, like when I was a kid, I would go to Sunday school and my mom, before I would walk in the door, would hand me a buck. That wasn't a percentage, but it was giving and it's good. But percentage giving is different. It's, for me and my family, we adjust our standard of living in order to give. When you're saying this, you're saying, God, your kingdom is more important than my kingdom. What you're doing throughout eternity is more important than this temporary stuff. It's more important than my kingdom. And so we adjust our standard of living in order to give a percentage. Now, in a lot of churches, you'll hear that you've got to give 10%. I actually believe in my own study of the Bible and talking to some other people that there's really in the New Testament no percentage given. You could give 5%. The Bible says give joyfully. The Bible says give out of what you can. And the Bible also says there's no ceiling on 10. There's actually a pastor of another little church in California. His name is Rick Warren. He actually gives, get this, 91% of his money away. 91%. Now, that would wreck my family. He's doing okay, by the way. Don't send him any cash. He's doing all right. He actually retroactively paid his church back for every dime they ever paid him. And he doesn't take a salary anymore. Now, he wrote a book you might have heard of. It's kind of a bestseller. And he's doing all right. But he gives away 91%. He used to give away 90%. Then he and his wife looked at each other and said, let's bump it up to 91%. And that's crazy generosity. That's a generous man. But percentage giving says, look, God, instead of me just giving you a tip, I'm going to basically sit down with my family and say, what's the percentage I'm going to give? That I'm going to give joyfully and that I'm going to consistently give. That's why we set up online giving at our church so that you can say, this is what I'm going to do. Priority giving is I'm going to give God the first. When I get my money, my first check or my first thought is I want to make sure that gets in there because something may go wrong this month. Some people might say, because something may go wrong this month, I'm going to hold that back. I mean, if the air conditioner goes out in my car in the middle of summer, I want to have that. But I think that this way of thinking is, if something goes wrong, I want that to be sure that it's in there. Priority giving, God gets the first. When you write your first check, make sure it's in there. Your kingdom is number one, God. It's saying, your kingdom is number one, not mine. I don't want your work or your kingdom or what your vision is for this community to suffer. You hear all the time when you're talking to a financial consultant, pay yourself first, and that's called saving. This is a different way of thinking about that. Pay God first, pay yourself second, and then figure out a way to live on the rest. In my family and in a lot of families, it's spoken like this. Give, save, and live on the rest. Give first, save second, and live on the rest. Find a way to live, you know, give maybe 10%, save 10%, live on the rest. If you do that, then you figure out how to live on the rest, you win in this life because you've got a different mindset of almost everybody you know when it comes to money. We win in this life and we win in the life to come. And in the process, your heart changes. And the third thing is progressive giving. This is something that's been a part of our family. Think periodically, just adjust the percentage. Bump the percentage up, even give a quarter or a half percent. It's amazing how much money is sitting around our house. When we first did Crank It a couple of years ago, 3 years ago, I was addicted to Diet Dr. Pepper. I'm not happy to admit that, but I was. I mean, 6, 7, 8, 9 cans a day, all right? There was a gasp. I heard the gasp. It's okay. We figured out that we could save $1,200 a year if I would totally go off of Diet Dr. Pepper for 2 years. $1,200 over 2 years. Whoa, no. First of all, he's like, let's get this man some help. We could save $1,200 over 2 years. So we did. It was painless. Well, I had a headache for 3 weeks, but it was relatively painless. So we were able to bump up our giving just by saying, I don't want that to be a part of my life right now. Now, there's a huge Diet Dr. Pepper down there that I've been drinking this entire service, except for when I'm up here, so I'm back on. So I'm not as addicted. I promise. I drink like one a day, but that one's 52 ounces. Roger Graber brought me that, and that was wrong. So, because now I have to finish it. Progressive giving says periodically you say, I'm gonna bump up that number. Are you giving a percentage? Are you giving God the first? Are you inching that up? If you don't have a plan, it's time to make one. We got a couple of obstacles that are always in our way. Number one, I'm afraid. What if this happens? What if, you know, something goes wrong? And there's another obstacle that's pretty big that nobody ever talks about. You know, I'm greedy. Nobody ever says that. Nobody says, why aren't you giving? Well, my problem is mainly greed. I'm selfish. No one ever says that. It's the sin that doesn't exist. You can go to a life group for 5 years and no one ever says, you know what, my big problem is I'm selfish and greedy. No, no one is. No one ever thinks of themselves that way. But sometimes when you think, but I want this, then that's a sign. It boils down to who has control of your heart, who's the Lord. And if you don't get this right, you lose, but you don't lose just financially. You lose in every area of your life. You don't just lose in the area of finances. And as God, here's what's cool about this. As God loosens the grip of stuff on your life, He will also loosen the world's grip around your heart. And that's what I want for you as your pastor. That's what I want, because I've seen it happen in my own life. I hope that we get it. I hope that we get that this is not just about money. In fact, I hope that the whole sum of this sermon is not just about money, but you walk out of here thinking about your heart instead. Because our vision as a church is this. Every time you invest here, there are teenagers that are going to have a small group leader sitting around with them saying, you know what? I don't get everything you're going through, but I'm willing to listen. And teenagers are making the most significant decisions of their life right now. And because of your investment, and don't forget this, because of your investment, we're able to do life-on-life relational ministry with them. Right now, the gospel is being shared in Mali, West Africa, in a predominantly Muslim country. And don't think you don't have a part in that. Every single time the gospel is shared, if you're giving here, you're investing there. You're taking something temporary and making it eternal. There are conversations that happened in San Antonio because we have a missionary down there. College students hearing the gospel. There are new believers in Italy. Italy, a very hard ground, a very hard place to share the gospel because we have a missionary there, Lauren. And Lauren sits down and there are 3 or 4 new believers she just had this last year of people that have come to know the Lord. Because why? Because of your investment. And here's one thing I want you to know. If you doubt my motive for a second, please give somewhere. Generosity is something that you need to work into your life. We're fine. Reality Church is going to be fine. God's going to fund this ministry. This is not about me trying to get you to give here. I want you to give. Become a generous person. If you doubt our motives, you don't want to give here, then don't give here. But please schedule a lunch meeting with me and let's talk it out a little bit because I want to know, what would that be about? But listen, it doesn't get you off the hook. God wants you, He's going to fund His ministries. But how is he going to do it? Is he going to do it with your heart bought in? That's what he wants. He's after your heart. We've got a chance to take something temporary and make it something eternal today. Let's look, put that back up there. Take something temporary and make it eternal. And it's the big live. We've got 600 time slots available back there. We're going to move out into our community, and we're going to serve this community. The homeless, we're going to pick up trash at parks, we're going to do a fun run, we're going to do all sorts of things in our community that are going to make a very real, tangible difference. But not just a difference that lasts, a difference that lasts for eternity. Take the temporary, your amount of time, invested in the big live, 600 slots, I think over 50 sites available, or about 50. I think it might be exactly 50 sites available. Take that weekend as we just invest in our community as a church and sign up today. I'm sure other people are going to tell you to do that, but this is your chance to take something temporary today and make it eternal right out there in the lobby. You can't miss it. There's tables everywhere. So don't miss it. Sign up. Take this chance to take a step into taking your temporary amount of time and turning it into something eternal. I hope that we get it. Let's be the kind of church that has just been captured by God's vision for what he wants to do here.